8 o'clock hour, Sports Radio 610. I'm Sean Bajani, in for Sean Pendergast. He's out all week. I'll be in through Wednesday. And then Seth, it'll be fun. I don't know who's hosting with you on Thursday.
Thursday, I think Reginald and Cho are doing I don't know if they're going for 12 hours or what.
Oh, that's
but
right.
But I'll be on for a couple of those hours. But,
yeah, you said like...
I didn't know I had the day off, so Reginald asked if I would join them for a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, it'd still be... Yeah, sure. I was planning on working anyway, so thank you for letting me know I actually had a vacation on Wednesday and then seizing it back from me.
Friday, we're all chilling on July 4th. Hopefully you are as well.
Yeah.
Having a extended weekend once again. Those are always good. The NBA league year officially changes over at midnight tonight. At that time, nearly 180 players will become free agents officially, and that includes the 9 players who have already agreed to new contracts to date, 142 unrestricted free agents, and 36 restricted free agents. The Rockets got one of those big fish via trade last week, bringing in Kevin Durant, and now you turn your attention to free agency and see who they're going to try to pair Kevin Durant and their young core of now Jabari Smith Jr., Alperen Şengün, Amen Thompson, etc. And that'll be an interesting follow. Now, the audio that I was going to play here, I totally blanked on this. This is not current audio, like as in Rockets reacting to Kevin Durant. This is two former Rockets that were talking about Kevin Durant.
This was after the Clippers lost to the Warriors in the 2019 playoffs.
2019, there you go, yeah.
Yeah, Pat Beverly and Lou Williams of the Clippers got up, and I think it was Shelly Smith asking them a question. I didn't include all of her part in here, but Shelly Smith basically asked, was there something more you guys could have done to try to stop Kevin Durant, who just absolutely went off in that elimination game?
I mean, he's Kevin Durant.
I promise we tried.
We didn't roll over. And we didn't just say, hey, man, you know what? Just come on, give us 50 tonight. Of course not. You know, he's a hell of a player. The shots he took, you know, he made some tough shots. If you was a coach, what'd you tell us to do? Thank you.
We tried everything. All right. So we tried everything. We had several different coverages for KD, and
they didn't work.
like sometimes you come across special people, and it doesn't matter what you send to them. It's no scheme. It's no defense. It's no nothing that you can do with special people. He's one of them, and he showed it tonight.
That is some of the best audio that I've heard. I love that.
Yeah. The facial expression, too, on Lou, it was funny because Beverly was kind of going after the reporter almost like, well, what would you do? He was getting defensive for no good reason. I think she was asking a very fair question like, man, was there anything else you could have done or what have you? And he's asking for her basketball expertise. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to fault the writer for not having the options. Like, he's just curious. What could you have done? And so as Beverly's kind of going in on the attack, that was the second time he had questioned her about what she would have done. Lou kind of steps in almost like as a mediator. I'm like, hold on a second. Let me approach this from another angle. We tried everything. It was awful.
Oddly enough, that's the same postseason that Kevin Durant ruptured his Achilles. It happened in the finals.
Yeah.
But that's 2019 Kevin Durant that they're talking about. And now you've got the unicorn Kevin Durant that really doesn't appear to have fallen off, you know, much since coming back, you know, from an Achilles. And now he's going to be 37 years old by the time, or shortly after the season starts, I think it is, this year. Do you think that opposing defenses, opposing players are going to have, like, similar reactions to a 37-year-old plus Kevin Durant in the next 1 to 3 years for the Rockets?
I think there is an element of Kevin Durant in his game where so much of it is just about his length. The like geometry ages well, and your ability to shoot when you're as long as he is whatever drops in athleticism he's had, he's very capable for making up for it. For him, really, honestly, my biggest concern is just, all right, how good are they at load managing him and keeping him healthy for the playoffs? Because if you look at the minutes he's played the last couple of years, he's played more minutes per game in the last couple of years than he has since he was in his late 20s.
Yeah.
They've just really relied on him to lift up and pick up a team that was not as good as this current Rockets team. So I think they're going to be really careful with him, and it might be frustrating at times during the regular season. He might get frustrated with it, but as long as he's healthy in the postseason, which is a big if for a 37-year-old, then I'm not worried about it. I think that, yeah, that's, you go back to Tim Duncan or any of the other big men that just, you just can't account for their ability to shoot 6 inches taller from where you can block.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the frustration potentially. Look, there's so much that could happen down the road. It was actually one of my concerns during the season, you know, when Kevin Durant was being talked about as a possible trade target for the Rockets. And, you know, we had the conversations of, boy, you know, what's it going to take at that point in time to land Durant ahead of the trade deadline? Did you at all have, like, any concern, like, at that point in time? Do you remember, like, infusing Kevin Durant potentially ahead of the trade deadline this past regular season for the Rockets, was there like any trepidation for you? Like, man, is this guy going to come in and maybe disrupt what's going on with the Rockets' young core, bringing drama or added attention, a distraction? Did you think about that at all?
No, I did, yes. And I think a couple things helped along the way. One was that, okay, the biggest drama we ever really saw from him in terms of perhaps not meshing right or what have you on the court, the biggest ones were with what? Okay, Draymond Green, who has actually physically assaulted various teammates. Okay, we got into it with Draymond Green. If anything, that's a check plus in his favor. In that maybe he got tired of Russell Westbrook being an absolute errantly thrown hand grenade 50% of the time he touches the basketball. Yeah. Like, okay. Oh no. Kevin Durant couldn't find a way to rein in and get the absolute best and most efficient version of Russell Westbrook. I don't blame yeah. Kevin Durant for that. And I certainly don't blame Kevin Durant for Draymond Green acting like the actual lunatic that Draymond Green is. So the big thing though really was that if Udoka worked with Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. He also worked with James Harden in Brooklyn. It looks like from that time in Brooklyn, Udoka had maybe a more positive assessment of exactly what Kevin Durant is than maybe James Harden, because Udoka did not seem to want to have any part of Harden coming back last year. So that part of it, the fact that I think Udoka is pretty good at instilling the right kind of culture, I don't think Udoka would have considered bringing Kevin Durant on if he didn't think that it was going to be the right kind of fit.
That's a good point.
Plus, what are they? Oh no, are they going to disrupt this finely tuned offense?
Yeah, yeah. No,
is one. Yeah,
that's a really good point. And I thought about it like this too. You know, you mentioning Udoka had a previous impression of James Harden and what kind of led to, you know, that situation not working at all in Brooklyn. But then, you know, when Udoka comes to Houston, he gets a different perspective and probably the same kind of opinion as well, or confirmation from Rafael Stone in regards to how things went when Harden was here. And for a loud minority, I think it is, at least if the Pender poll put out this weekend is any indication, when Sean Pendergast asked, hey, Rocket fans, do you want James Harden to return as a Houston Rocket? The results overwhelmingly no, in the near the 90th percentile saying that. I think that was just kind of further confirmation. But a guy like Kevin Durant, I just always remember, like, okay, the heel turn, right? Oklahoma City to Golden State. And what we learned about Kevin Durant in Golden State is maybe he didn't like the way that the offense was working with him being infused with Klay Thompson and Seth Curry and Draymond Green, obviously, but it worked well enough to where he's got two titles to show for it. The relationship that exists and has existed between Durant and Udoka is something I don't know that we're really going to be able to wrap our minds around until we see it in action ourselves in a few months.
Yeah, I think the where you still have to make improvements with your younger players, and where they still need to bring in some shooters from the outside, that's all part and parcel to all of this. Durant does make you immediately a better offense in some respects, but to fully capitalize on it, they've got more work to do.
Yeah.
You know, and Udoka has established, obviously, that he can get a good, really good defense out there. They can be great in transition. It's the half-court offense, and what exactly does it look like? That part of it is it's as much on Udoka at this point as it is on Durant. I think that it's interesting, though, too, if you think about the way the fan base has processed all of this. It's got a weird similarity to 2 years ago when there was a potential that J.J. Watt might come back and play, and everybody was, you know, the Texans fan base was going gaga over the prospect of J.J. coming back to play for a potentially playoff caliber team.
Yeah, I was too.
That was in 2023. Then all of a sudden in 2024, when it comes up again in the offseason, people are kind of like, well, it'd be a nice story, I suppose, but, you know, I'm not going to break my back or demand that it happens or anything. And I think with the Rockets, just the season that they had and then bringing Durant into the mix, by and large, has a lot of Rockets fans feeling like, all right, listen, nostalgia's great and all, but we made one big move. We don't need to get desperate to try to cobble together every big name that we can get at this point. These are, like, you actually genuinely want more of the less heralded moves to be the key thing to finish us off, more so than bringing in somebody that there are far more questions about what James Harden might do to the composition of the team and the culture than there are about Kevin Durant.
Oh, 100%. I think this is kind of the perfect scenario in which if you're going to infuse a big star into something, doing it in an off season is the best time to do it if you can do that. And the Rockets were definitely at a stage from an organizational standpoint to be patient and to wait, because who knows what it would have cost or what the Suns were asking for from teams during the season ahead of the trade deadline to make it work for Kevin Durant. So I'm glad the Rockets were patient in that regard. And it's we've gone through the James Harden. We've gone through the Russell Westbrook. Hell, Patrick Creighton asked me on Friday night. He was like, what do you think about Chris Paul? I'm like, no, please, no. We don't need to do that. We don't need to revisit that. There are certain guys where, you know, you draw a hard line in the sand. Chris Paul's not necessarily one of those guys, but I do not foresee at all Chris Paul leaving San Antonio from a role that he is in there. I heard, you know, reports like, hey, could he work well in New Orleans? Maybe, but you're going to ask Chris Paul all of a sudden to stop playing at least 30 minutes a night to, you know, being a role player behind Fred VanVleet as a backup point guard, albeit at the age of 40, still a lot of pride attached to a guy that played all 82 games last year for the Spurs. I don't know if Chris Paul's ready to, take that next step in his career.
I think in trying to find the right balance between being a homegrown team, but then adding people from the outside, The Rockets have a young core that has so much potential. And you pair away from that young core when you get rid of Jalen Green to bring in Kevin Durant. And yet, that's if you want to have sustained success over a long period of time, like, this feels right. Like, this is a move that you can make right now where, okay, one big move for Durant where you keep so many of these guys in the young core together and work towards something that, yes, you're going to have to make some hard decisions financially in the next couple of years, but as much as you can retain that young core, that's your best bet at getting multiple opportunities at winning a championship.
One of the results in this deal between the Suns and the Rockets trade, outside of Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, and the 5 second round picks they dealt Phoenix's way, was the 10th overall pick in last week's draft. Ended up being Kaman Maliwach, a player from the Sudanese, from the South Sudan. And Rich Paul is his agent. There's audio set that surfaced of Rich Paul in the car on the phone with Suns owner Matt Ishbia pre-draft. Take a listen.
If you guys keep 10, I'm going to mention a name and you tell me how much you like him. Come on, Malawak, if I can get him there.
A lot. That'd be my first choice.
Okay, done deal. That's all I need
to hear.
If
you can get there?
I'm going to try my best because you're our first choice. If he gets past Brooklyn, then yeah. But let me make those calls so I can let you do what you need to do.
All right, yeah, call me back when you hear.
I will. Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, so I play that audio because I got in the comments, man. I got in the comments whenever I saw this video, and people are like losing their minds about this video and this phone call that surfaced in that Rich Paul, sports agent, representing Kaman Malawach, and he ends up obviously going number 10 to the Phoenix Suns, but it's, hey, this guy's, you know, making this happen. He's calling other teams to, like, make this guy fall to number 10 to where the Phoenix Suns will draft him. Like, I'm thinking the whole time as I'm reading these comments of people losing their mind, talking about this is illegal and this shouldn't happen, like, this is exactly what a sports agent should be doing. Am I wrong here?
I think that you're seeing how the sausage is made, and I think that that's how people have known that a lot of the super agents can and do operate, is that they can kind of dictate terms to teams. And I guess it was cool to watch for me. I understand why people don't like it, because they like the idea of, okay, in the draft, right, we're going to have our crack at all these guys who don't have any choice in the matter about where they go. And, I guess my biggest takeaway is, all right, you just got to be sure that you have got an agent like Rich Paul. Because if you're an agent that's trying to do this type of stuff, like, frankly, if you're Deion Sanders acting as your son's representative, you better damn sure know what you're doing. And that's where I think guys like Rich Paul have a big advantage. Scott Boras in baseball has a big advantage in that, because he knows what's going on behind the scenes. People tell him honestly how they feel about players and everything, so he can kind of engineer the outcomes more so than other guys.
Yeah.
I looked at it as, all right, that's pretty a lot of people in the comments were wondering, like, why would he just show evidence of tampering? Like, because it's not tampering.
Right.
Nobody's under contract there. None of these guys are under contract. From the player's perspective, I like players. I don't like the draft just because it's very un-American that you got some guy that put himself. If you graduate top in your class at law school, you're going to get to pick which law firm you want to go to. If you graduate top in your class in a draft class, it's the exact opposite. You're like, nope, you're probably going to go to one of the worst teams in the league. Deal with it. So I like I like it when people maneuver around and use whatever leverage they do have. The biggest mistake is if you underestimate your leverage. Like Shador underestimated the leverage that he had.
Yeah, no, I think a great point, man. It's just, to me, I want my agent to find the best situation for me. And if the team really wants me, I'm going to do everything in my power to make that happen. And who's to say that Rich Paul, and maybe this is a little naive for me, isn't calling the other team saying, hey, look, man, you know, the best fit for my guy is really in Phoenix and he really wants to be there. Kind of trying to dissuade, like, maybe teams that are picking at 7, 8, or 9, whatever, to, yeah, okay, if he really didn't want to be here, then we'll look elsewhere.
Yeah, that's what, you know, the one agent who did a good job for is Lyle Collins. Do you remember the offensive lineman who became a person of interest in a murder case like 2 days before the draft? And Lyle Collins was a first-round talent, but he was sliding in the draft. And his agent, I think he admitted later that he was bluffing, but he had told teams, like, don't draft him past wherever in the draft because we're not gonna sign that contract if you do that. So he kind of exerted leverage that maybe theoretically he didn't have, and the Cowboys ended up giving Lyle Collins a deal above where he ended up being drafted. That's exactly why you hire an agent, is to be able to do stuff like this.
Seth Payton and Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning. Coming up next, while the Rockets locked up one of their young core this weekend, and Jabari Smith, has this young Astro done enough to make his team break protocol? We'll discuss next. Stay there. Good morning, everybody. Welcome in. Appreciate you joining us this morning. I'm Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. Seth Payne still here. Hit us up, 713-572-4610, 572-4610. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can text in or join the chat on YouTube and Twitch. We mentioned this a little bit earlier, I think as part of Acknowledge Me, with Cam Smith. We kind of turned into a Cam Smith-Jeremy Pena conversation, but kind of attack it from a different angle in this regard with you, Seth. And listeners, if they want to weigh in on the question, do so, 713-572-4610. But there was a Chandler Rome report last week, and I'll kind of slash it, like Chandler Rome slash Ari Alexander. I saw it from both of these guys, that Jeremy Pena and the Astros were in deep discussions about a contract extension. 5 years, $105+ million was the report. And we had Bob Nightingale on to talk about that on Friday, and he'd said he heard it was 5 years, $100 million on the nose. So whatever, you want to quibble about $500,000 AAV, go for it. But Pena, in that report, also decided to switch agencies from whoever was representing him to now we know it's big dog Scott Boras, who also represents Jose Altuve, Hunter Brown, was and is representing Alex Bregman, and there might be another current Astro that I'm forgetting. But now Scott Boras is representing Jeremy Pena in his pursuit of maybe a long-term extension with the Houston Astros. This is going to be an interesting follow, Seth, because Jeremy Pena's got 2 years remaining of arbitration, and the fact that the Astros have already decided to sit down at the table with Jeremy Pena in representation to maybe talk about getting him locked up, and it sounds like there's no maybe about it. If you're deep in conversations and there's numbers that are being reported, this thing might be a little bit closer than not, or at least it was. How confident are you now that the Astros are maybe able to get something going long term with Jeremy Pena with Scott Boras as a representation?
I'm not. The only thing that would make me feel a little bit more confident was that Dana Brown told the pregame radio show on Saturday, it was a Saturday or Sunday, that he called Scott Boras right away after Jeremy Pena hired Boras as his agent. And Brown said he told Boras that we are still, quote, we're still interested in signing Jeremy long term, and we'll be in touch. So I'm happy, I guess, that the Astros are still going to try to pursue a long-term extension. I'm pessimistic that Scott Boras is going to do anything more than scoff at anything that isn't $30 million per year or more,
you know,
right now. Let's say at the very least $25 million a year or more, but I'm guessing it's a little bit more than that. And the Astros are probably not going to go more than a five-year extension.
That's to be expected, though, right? Dana Brown did what he's supposed to do as a general manager. Like the person you're courting, okay, that you want to keep around for a long time. It's like, I don't know, maybe you're dating this girl and parents get a divorce during the time that you're really getting serious. And, you know, dad's no longer in the picture and mom brings in a new guy and she's going to be the stepdad. And now you've got to ask stepdad's permission, like, hey, you know, I've been seeing the girl for a while, and hey, are you okay? You know, I'm thinking about asking her to marry me, and you know, what do you think? You have to you have to put the work in with the father figure, you know, that you're going to be interacting with and seeing on a regular basis, too. It's no different here in my mind. Like, Dana Brown has obvious dealings before with Scott Boras, and this is a guy that they've already gotten serious about as a, you know, 28-year-old, maybe a little bit of a late bloomer in Jeremy Pena, who's having a breakout career season this year. And, you know, should be an all-star at shortstop, and I think and will end up being that way. But they think he's going to be really good for a long time. That's exactly what 5 years, $100+ million says to me.
Right. Yeah, that's how they feel about it. And yet Boras, when, you know, Pena is also having these discussions while he's currently one of the best players in baseball, and is looks like he's realizing his potential, and you start to wonder, well, wait a second, all right, I know what, guys, if I kept playing this way for the next couple of years, I know I'd be making more than $105 million. Who's the best guy to tell me exactly what my prospects are, what the numbers are? And that's where a guy like Scott Boras comes in. It's as much for what he can advise you about how other teams view you as anything else. We listened to that Rich Paul audio of Rich Paul or basically orchestrating the draft for his client, and making sure that he falls to the Suns.
Yeah.
Via the Rockets at number 10. And that's exactly what really good agents do for you. So if the Astros, if they had signed an extension of 5 years, $105 million, then that would have been right now, if that got announced yesterday, you would have thought, my God, this is a brilliant move by the Astros. Peña is thinking wait a second, why am I in the business of putting the Astros in position to make the brilliant move? So, yeah, I think your analogy is a great one. Sounds like the biological father's a real jackass in that scenario. So the stepfather comes in, and he's actually got a pretty good, wait a second. No, I've spotted a lot of problems with this offer of yours, young man, including the fact that you haven't had a job in 2 years. No. We're reexamining the issue. I feel like that's what Boris is going to be.
You know, I mentioned Cam Smith as well. Let me ask you this question this way. Because there's very much a, 5 year rule of thumb as it pertains to Jim Crane and his ownership and decision making with the Houston Astros. They haven't gone beyond 5 years. Now, they made a record offer to Alex Bregman. They were going to go 6 years and I think it was $160 million or something like that before he ended up getting the Brinks trucks backed up. To his front door by the Boston Red Sox, but
the option truck backed up to his
Got the option truck, and now they're going to be looking at maybe a long term deal with Bregman. I saw contract discussions maybe ensuing between them and the Red Sox even while he's still hurt. He hadn't played baseball in a month. Maybe they want to do something longer term and get rid of the options. We'll see. But if the Astros are going to break protocol on anybody, do you think there are two players on the roster currently that they'll do it for? Jeremy Peña being one, and the other maybe looking a little too far down the road right now. But I mean, I really like what I see from Cam Smith, who came in as one of the top prospects in all of Major League Baseball and has just now, I think, played in his 100th professional game and is looking very much like he's playing chess instead of checkers. Versus what you thought a rookie was going to perform like, could the Astros break protocol on Peña and or Cam Smith?
Cam Smith would make the most sense because you just have because he's so young, and right now if you went longer than 5 years, you're not going as far into that territory of, okay, what is this guy going to be when he's 30 years old or what have you? So Cam's the one that I think would be more likely. And for them to break it, it wouldn't feel like they're out of line with the way they've operated with a lot of other guys, where they don't want to give a guy longer than 5 years, certainly when he's already in his late 20s, because that puts you right into that unknown uncharted territory of, okay, what's this guy going to look like in his mid-30s? So I think it's still possible with Cam. I don't think the organization would feel like they're necessarily bending too much, but I'd still put it at not likely to happen. I think in this year, if anything, might be the biggest display of why they wouldn't do it. It's that, man, we don't know what it's going to look like in any given year, much less what it's going to look like 5, 6, 7 years from now.
Yeah.
We just trust that we're going to be able to develop guys and find opportunities to go get another Cam Smith or a Jeremy Peña.
And in no way am I saying that the Astros need to lock Cam Smith up right now. I made a tongue-in-cheek joke about that with PC the other day. I was like, come on, let's go. 10-year deal right now. Still has two pre-arbitration years remaining, and then he'll hit arbitration. And I think, what is it, 3 years of arbitration before you're eligible?
Yeah, you got
for
5 years of control left of him.
Yeah. So there's no rush, and this is a guy who for the next couple of years you're going to be paying close to the veteran minimum, or league minimum rather, for Cam Smith. There's no rush. You still have time to see this thing play out and make a determination. I'm just saying, it looks like that trajectory is pretty good to where if the Astros did decide under the Crane Brown leadership to break protocol, he's a pretty damn good guy to do it for.
I feel like this is and while all this is happening, I'm sitting here and I've kind of just put Framber Valdez in a compartment to the side where I don't even think about the fact that he's probably gone.
Yeah.
And this is how I guess that's where it's learned helplessness. I've learned to stop hoping that they're going to extend guys. Okay. You look at the year the Astros are having. You look at what Dana Brown looks like. He pulled off a damn coup in what he got back for Kyle Tucker. And if anything, I think the organization is more emboldened to just continue on that path of like, oh, okay, yeah, we couldn't get Kyle Tucker back on a long-term deal that we would have been uncomfortable paying, but we got now Paredes, who's playing like one of the best third basemen in the league, and we've got Cam Smith, who has a very, very bright future ahead of him, not to mention Wesneski off waiting in the wings somewhere.
Yeah.
If anything, this year is going to harden their position that, no, we're not going to stretch beyond 5 years on any of these guys.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially with Bryce Matthews mashing baseballs the minor league level. It's going to give the Astros options and more thinking. Coming up next, we'll get back to a little bit of the Astros. 5-1 homestand over the weekend, taking care of biz over the Phils and the Cubs. It's more Payne and Pendergast. Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. Stay put. Sean Bajani and Seth Payne this morning. Sean Pendergast out for the week, holding it down. 713-572-4610. If you'd like to weigh in, be a part of the show on the text line. Astros with a 2-0 victory yesterday. Fromber was terrific for 6 innings. Jose Altuve providing the only offense. 2-0. Was the final, hit the two-run dinger in the fifth. Was it the fourth or fifth inning? I can't remember now. But it was a hell of an entertaining game. And I feel like the Astros, Seth, have been, you know, that Philly series, it was 2-1, 1-0, 3-1 ball games, whatever. They've been playing some of the most entertaining, like, low-scoring games that I can remember. And it's... And maybe it, for us, because we've got, you know, a little bit of a closer eye on it, it's a little more entertaining because they are continuing to win and, you know, have these performances for guys from guys that you're just not really expecting it from. And
yeah, or you're not, or at least you weren't expecting them from. I guess the biggest thing that's happened to me over the course of the season is that a lot of the games that I would have early in the season complained about them being boring games because the Astros continue to not really score that many runs, are now I get this, my mouth starts to water when the game is tied in the sixth inning or the Astros have a one-run lead in the sixth inning because the bullpen has been so good. And you've seen them come up in clutch moments. I mean, their record when tying or leading in the sixth inning beyond has been really, really good. They've been the best team in the sport of baseball in the month of June. And that includes these last two series versus two of the best baseball teams, or two of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Yesterday's game, if played in early May, I would have said, like, I'm sick of this boring baseball. Now I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I want. Boring to everybody except people who have been conditioned to expect this.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, look, it was from two guys that you very much expect this kind of thing from, Jose Altuve and Framber Valdez yesterday. And I was kind of talking in generalities too, but Framber, this is a pretty wild stat. And I thought about this even more. You know, Tarik Skubal pitched another tremendous game yesterday. And I think it was like his last 10 starts, he's gotten all 10 decisions. He's 10-0. He's getting a lot of love. Obviously, he's doing some tremendous things, maybe the best in baseball from a pitching standpoint. But Framber Valdez, like, in his last 10 starts, he's 8-0, and the Astros are 10-0. He hadn't gotten every decision, but dang it, when he's on the mound, Seth, they're winning baseball games, low-scoring games, high-scoring games. It doesn't matter. And you mentioned the bullpen. I thought one of the most dominating performances from Brian Abreu that I'd seen yesterday, it's not against slouches. It's not against, you know, the A's or the White Sox or some bottom feeder. It's against a really good baseball team, and it was against the top of the order. He had 4 strikeouts in 2 innings and induced 2 weak pop-ups in his role in a pivotal point of the game late to set the stage again for Josh Hader. You had an opportunity, and you can almost mark it down when Framber Valdez pitches. You're going to see Brian Abreu and Josh Hader in the game, yeah. But it's about the guys who maybe come in before. And I love the fact that it could be a Brian King. It could be a Steven Okert. It could be a Bennett Souza, who's gotten more opportunities here lately to pitch in some higher leverage situations. I love to see it because it's making me feel really good about, you know, the sixth and seventh inning guys now.
I think if you, again, go back to the beginning of the season to where you are right now, it's okay now to worry about, okay, Astros, don't play down to the Rockies. Early in the season, people would say, oh, there go the Astros playing down to a bad team. And you'd have to say, okay, but are we positive that they're not just playing with that same team, that they're just not playing at their level, which is subpar baseball? The concept of a letdown series isn't the same as it is in football, but there is a little bit of, man, you took 5 of 6 versus the Phillies and the Cubs. Don't squander any of this healthy lead in the division by playing poorly against the Rockies. Just take care of business. Because you're going to have another great test in the Dodgers coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's for real, just continue to play steadily and consistently the way you have over these. Well, I mean, it's 11 series now in which they've either won or tied each of the last 11 series. They've been playing a pretty damn good brand of baseball for a while.
Yeah, well, since May 1st, MLB best 34-20. And again, they were the best in the month of June. As it's over for them, 19-7, they're off today. They'll be back at it, as you said, against Colorado and the Dodgers. They'll start a 6-game road trip tomorrow. Colton Gordon, Hunter Brown, Brandon Walter, your rotation against the Rockies in that regard. It's been really fun, but at some point in time, we got to turn the conversation over, okay? Stop being surprised about, you know, the contributions that you've gotten out of, you know, a Gordon, Augusto, a Walter, whoever. And albeit that, to me, the most surprising thing is now at this point, it's not that those guys are performing well and you're seeing the results. It's that you're seeing results when Christian Walker has gone from batting cleanup and hell bent that the Astros are not going to remove him from that role to fifth, to sixth, to now batting seventh, you know, in the order. And it's just the guys that you least expect it from in the lineup, like Jake Myers, who's still hitting 300 in now that the month of June is over. How are we feeling about that, by the way? Because this is the first time, I think, in Jake Myers' career where he has not sucked in the month of June. He's been tremendous always in the month of May, and now for the first time in his career, he's put together two really good months in a career.
I think the thing with Jake is, no matter where he settles in, at the very least, like, he just, if he could be long-term average but as good as he is in center field, that's something you can win baseball games with. The changes that he made in spring training, I think that it gave him just more substance behind what he's been doing this year. And we saw the same improvements with Jeremy Pena. Those are like substantial, notable things that are actually working. So with Myers, I feel good about it. I don't know on, like, what's he finished the season at. I'll be surprised if he reverts back into that old guy that's got a 550 OPS in any given month or whatever it might be. I think he's going to be all right. So I feel like of those, the potential unknowns, and all right, what is this guy really? It's still, for me, it revolves around the young pitchers, Lance McCullers, and exactly who is he, what is he, yeah. And then the guys coming back. It's really all, it's all amongst the pitchers. Javier Garcia, JP France, what do you see out of Spencer Arrighetti when they come back? Those are my big unknowns right now.
Hey, by the way, is Jose Altuve back in y'all's circle of trust? Or have you left him out?
Altuve was back in because after he was ejected from it, he responded. And that, in the time after he was in the, from the time we reinstated him until the next one, or from the time we kicked him out until the next circle of trust, he had like a 1,011 OPS or whatever.
I didn't know if you guys were being all superstitious and all and leaving him out
Oh, no, no, no. We never let superstition guide. No, we would never do that. We would never disgrace the circle of trust by letting, no. Nobody stays out with the expectation that, like, oh, this is what's working for him.
All right.
God,
don't,
no.
Don't disgrace the circle of trust.
Then
answer this question the proper way. Is Jake Myers in said circle of trust yet? And will he be up for induction?
Yeah, yeah, he's in the circle of trust because he kept playing in June.
Attaboy.
The last circle of trust was at the end of May. And we had to see, well, mostly I wanted to vote him into the circle of trust. Sean and Ben did not. So, we wanted to see how he did in June, and he kept it up in June.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to lobby Ben and, Sean to keep him in there. I would imagine, Isak Paredes, Cam Smith,
Cam Smith's not in the circle of trust.
What?
No, he still has to prove it. He'll probably be in the next one, given this month. But it was he wasn't far enough removed from a lot of his struggles. So if he keeps up this pace of play, then he'll be in the circle of trust next. We don't make allowances for rookies in the circle of trust. Like, he was at the time of the last induction, he was still just an average baseball player. Now, since the last induction, he's been Ted freaking Williams out there. It was like Christian Walker had had a good stretch. Right when we did the last circle of trust, but he's still like, no, you're an average baseball player. Our standards are higher than that.
Texter says, what do we have to worry about is Lance McCullers. Are we ready to close the book on him? He had one decent outing before he got injured and then came back and got rocked. No, that's not true. He had more than one decent outing when he came back.
He had five games where he was at about a 3.1, 3.2 ERA. He wasn't going deep as you want, but he was still working his way back. He's had a couple of really, really, really bad innings or third of an innings that have marred a lot of it. But he's the guy I get most nervous about of what version are we going to see out of him out here today. I don't know. I can tell you that the team's not going to – I'd be really surprised if the team abandons hope for him based on just this last performance. It's going to take multiple bad performances in a row for him to do that.
I agree. Come on. We've seen it before with Lance. He'll be back once he gets straight. I wouldn't be surprised if he spends, six innings, a two-hit ball his next outing. So just be patient.
We've seen it before, but we've also seen him. I mean, that's freak weight room accident or not, he's in that territory of, man, it's always something with Lance. It's you have a freak weight room accident, you go on the IL, you come back, and then this is your performance. It's always something with Lance, or at least it has been ever since the horrendous stretch of injuries started.
I know. I'm not going to give up on the guy, though. Coming up next, we'll hit the 9 o'clock hour. If the Texans make one final move, it should be for what and for who? We'll have it for you next. Stay put.